Now we're holding on Vav Amud Beis, the second line of the wide lines. We talked about yesterday, we've been talking about the question of saying b'fanei nechtam when you bring a get from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laaretz or from Chutz Laaretz to Eretz Yisrael. We mentioned the special status of Bavel. So we mentioned that Rabbi Yosser had said that when you bring a get from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, you're not supposed to say b'fanei nechtam, b'fanei nechtam. So Rabbi Yosef says, who says this Rabbi Yosser is knowledgeable in Torah that we should accept as halacha what he's saying? And anyway, we see that when he was writing a letter and he quoted a line from a pasuk, he didn't do sirtut, he didn't score lines on the parchment or on the paper to be able to write the letters straight as you're supposed to do when you're writing a pasuk. So therefore, says Rabbi Yosef, doesn't that show that Rabbi Yosef doesn't know what he's talking about? But Abaya said not necessarily, because the fact that he didn't know that halacha, okay, he didn't know that halacha. He never learned that particular statement of Rabbi Yitzchak. Doesn't mean that he's not knowledgeable in other areas of Torah. And now Abaya is going to continue with another point that, on the contrary, you see how great Rabbi Yosser is. So he says,
does it make the get pasul, you're saying, when there are no lines?
No, we're not talking about a get. We're saying something else. Rabbi Yosser had sent a letter to Rav Chista, or to Rav Yehuda, rather, criticizing people who come from Bavel and abandon their families in Bavel to go learn Torah in Eretz Yisrael. In that criticism, he wrote a pasuk, and he did not score lines on the parchments. We're not talking about get. The point is that Rabbi Yosef is saying, if you see that this Rabbi Yosser did not do that, did not follow that halacha, so he didn't know that halacha, how do you know that he's knowledgeable in other areas of halacha, such as the dinim of gittin, such as to be able to say that when a person brings a get from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, he shouldn't have said one of them.
So my question to you...
That doesn't need scored lines. Practically speaking, I think the surgeons can do that, but I don't think they're required to up the halacha.
So why do you say, why are they saying he doesn't know the halacha if the halacha doesn't force you to draw lines on a simple document?
You're confusing two things. Rabbi Yosser sent a letter, nothing to do with Gittin. Rabbi Yosser sent a letter in which he quoted a pasuk and did not score lines before he wrote that pasuk. Separately, Rabbi Yosef also said a din as far as gittin. So now Rabbi Yosef is saying, if he's not knowledgeable in that halacha of scoring lines before you write a pasuk, who says that he's knowledgeable in the halachas of gittin either, and that we can rely on it? So there are two separate.
Still, I'm not confusing anything. Who says that you have to draw a line, and someone can draw a conclusion on a simple letter when you don't draw a line?
Because we had yesterday, Braisa tells us, and then Rabbi Yitzchak tells us, that there's a maximum number of words from a pasuk that you can write without putting lines on the parchment. So we talked about briefly yesterday, Tosfos.
But that's not in a letter. That's not in a letter. That's on a parchment.
No, we're talking about anything. We're talking about in a letter when you're quoting a pasuk. We did talk about yesterday. There are various details about it. There are Rishonim who say, and this is what's brought lahalacha, that it's only if you're using ksav ashuri. It wouldn't apply, for example, if you're using handwriting. And Tosfos talks about over here, for example, that it would only be if you're quoting the pasuk because you're quoting it as a pasuk rather than, for example, you're just quoting it to use as a figure of speech, or if you're moving around words in the pasuk, if you're quoting the pasuk with words out of order or whatever, then you have various ways to get around this. But Rabbi Yosef didn't use any of that. He's writing a letter. We're assuming he used ksav ashuri. He's quoting a pasuk on the face of it in order to quote it as an actual pasuk rather than just as a figure of speech. So he should have put lines there based on what the Braisa says and based on what Rabbi Yitzchak says, and he didn't. And therefore, Rabbi Yosef is saying, does Rabbi Yosef know what he's talking about?
So the Braisa says it has to be in a letter, or the Braisa says any document.
Rabbi Yitzchak says shtayim kosvin shalosh ein kosvin. You can write only two words of a pasuk without scoring lines. If you're going to write three words or more, you have to score lines. Yes, it would be the same thing in a letter or anything else. Yes. So we don't draw directly
the halacha from a Braisa. We don't draw the halacha from a Braisa.
Rabbi Yitzchak's statement. In fact, we learned yesterday, Tosfos says that Rabbi Yitzchak apparently knew that the Braisa is incorrect, and therefore he said his own version of it, which is 2 verses 3. The Braisa said 3 verses 4, And so the halacha would be like Rav Yitzchak. So you can't write more than two words of a pasuk without scoring lines, subject to the conditions that we just said. And Rav Yosef did. And therefore Rav Yosef is saying, does Rav Yosef know what he's doing? So again, so Abaya says it's one thing. If a person doesn't know a halacha, he never learned that particular din of Rav Yitzchak, that doesn't necessarily call the rest of his knowledge and Torah into question. It would be something else if he didn't, if he didn't know something that's based on Svara. Then we could say that how could he not think of the Svara himself? But when you're basing yourself on something which is the Kabbalah from your Rebbeim, okay, he didn't have that particular Kabbalah from his Rebbeim. It's not, you can't hold that against him. Anyway, let's continue. We have a lot of ground to cover. So he continues, Va'oid, and furthermore, says Abaya, Rabbi Yosef to ask him more al yodei. You want to know how great Rabbi Yosef is, you should know that Hashem agreed with him, that Hashem agreed and told him a secret that that wasn't known before. So like this, so the Gemara is now going to discuss the story of Pelegish Begiva. So we know the story in brief, that there was a Levi from Har Ephraim, where he had a Pelegish from Beis Lechem in Yehuda. She had run away from him, as we're going to explain in the Gemara soon, why she did that. Anyway, so he went to Beis Lechem to win her back. The Kitzer, they left later than expected. They wound up, it's getting late in the day and they need a place to stay. They end up in the city of Giva in the territory of Binyamin. The people of Giva over there go and then nobody wants to bring them in for Aknasas Arachim. Afterwards, when there's one guy who does, then they all come and they all come and start surrounding the house and then beating on the door and demanding Hotzienu Reneda Osam. So in a way, it's similar to what happened in Sidoim with the Malachim over there, with the Malachim by Lot. Although the Ramban points out there are differences, including the fact that in Sidoim, the actual law was they don't allow guests, and if guests come, they're going to treat them badly like that, and then try to force them into Mishkav Zachar and so forth. Whereas in Giva, it wasn't like the law was like that. It was just you had a bunch of lowlifes over there that were trying to do that themselves. Anyway, the point is, the upshot was they sent out the Pelegish instead. They raped her all that night, and then she died in the morning. And then when everybody found out what happened, everybody was outraged, and they went to war. They demanded of Shevet Binyamin that they hand over these people to be punished by the national Sanhedrin. Bnei Binyamin refused to. They claimed that it's an internal thing within their Shevet or whatever it is. So they went to war, and tens of thousands of Jews were killed, and Shevet Binyamin was almost wiped out. So now the Gemara is going to analyze some details of that story.
Let me ask you a question. Did they requested that the Sanhedrin, National Sanhedrin, take care of that issue to punish them? Did they themselves ask the Sanhedrin to go to war and kill 10,000 Jews?
They did. When they went to war, they the usual thing is if you're going to go to war, you need the permission of the king or whoever's standing in place of the king, the Sanhedrin and the Urim V'Thummim. They even asked the Urim V'Thummim, just the Gemara mentions in Yuma, they didn't think to ask whether we should go to war. They just asked, given that we're going to war, who should lead the battle? So the Urim V'Thummim will only answer what they're asked. And therefore, they asked that. So Hashem said Yehuda should go first, but didn't tell them they should have thought to ask, should we even be going to war about this? They didn't. Apparently the Sanhedrin and whoever was leading the Jewish people at the time decided on their own that that's enough, and then they were just asking the Urim V'Thummim for confirmation.
Do what I say, don't do what I do.
I don't know what you mean. Do what I say, don't do what I do. They're saying that this is something, it's an outrage that such a thing should be done within the Jewish people. We need to punish them. We need to make sure that such a thing never happens again. You, Bnei Binyamin, need to hand them over. And they said, no, it's an internal matter within our Shevet, mix out. So the rest of the Jewish people weren't going to tolerate such a thing. And it speaks well for them that they weren't going to tolerate such an outrage. It wouldn't be like now, you know, you see it in the headlines and then, you know, okay, you know, what can you do about it? And you go on and then the next day everybody's forgotten about it.
Did the Bnei Binyamin ask the National Sanhedrin what they should do?
Apparently not. When the National Sanhedrin told them you need to hand over these guys, they said, nope, we'll deal with it ourselves, you mix out.
Oh.
And the rest of the Shvatim weren't going to tolerate that. All right, let's go on. We have a lot
of questions. National Sanhedrin said they have to give these guys.
Hold on, Bnei Binyamin refused to, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, yeah. Okay, so, Dichtiv. Now, the Pasuk says, when it introduces the whole story, that Tizna Olaf Pilagshay. It says he's Pelegish, this Levi's Pelegish Batizne. Now, literally, batizne means she committed znus, that she committed adultery, and then she ran away. But the Gemara is going to understand that it doesn't literally mean that she committed adultery, and Tosfos explains one reason that we know it's not that is because in that case, then he wouldn't have gone to try to win her back. She ran away, he would have given up on her. He wouldn't have bothered if she had actually committed znus. Therefore, the Gemara prefers to understand that it means that she did something else which caused her to leave. Rashi, in fact, on the pasuk points out the words, the shoresh zona, even though usually we mean it of immorality, really the basic meaning of it is to go out. In fact, in Targum, the word for zona is nafkas bora, which literally means someone who goes outside where she shouldn't. So therefore, so in that sense, she went out. In other words, she left the house. But the question is, what led to that? What caused her to run away? So Rabbi Yossi says that he found a fly. We'll see soon where the fly was. The pastor said his food, and he was angry at her, and therefore she ran away. Rabbi Yonasan says he found a hare, and again the Gemara is going to discuss soon where exactly that hare was. Anyway, so va'ashkechei Rabbi Yossi l'Eliyahu. So now, having had this machlokes with Rabbi Yonasan, one time Rabbi Yossi met up with Eliyahu, a navi. Omalei, and he asked him, "My Ka'ovid HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what is Hashem doing right now?" Omalei, so the Yor tells him, "Osik Pilegish Begiva." Right now, he's involved in learning about the story of Pilegish Begiva and learning all the ins and outs of it. That's part of Torah, after all. Hashem Kaviyachol, Hashem learned the Torah as well. So Rabbi Yossi asked him, "My Ka'ovid," so what does Hashem have to say about the story? Omalei, so Leo tells him, "Av Yosef bni kachu oimer, v'Yonasan bni kachu oimer." Hashem is saying, "My son of Yosef says such and such that he found a fly, and my son Yonasan says such and such that he found a hare." So Omalei, so Rabbi Yosef says, "Chas v'shalom, amikas sveka kamishmaya." Chas v'shalom, how could you say Hashem is saying that? Does Hashem have any doubts? We, you on earth, can say that we're not sure what it is that got him angry at her, that she therefore ran away. Hashem knows the truth. What do you mean he's saying Yonasan says this way and Av Yosef says that way? Omalei, so Leo answers him with the famous expression, Eva ve'ele divrei elokim chayimein. Both of them are the words of the living God. Both of them are correct, Alpi Torah. Both of them are correct as far as what actually happened. What happened was, Zvuv Motzav Eloi Hikpid. First he found a fly, and he didn't object to that so much. Nima Motzav Hikpid. Then he found a hare, and that he got angry at her. So we see, in other words, that both things factored into it. So in that case, then, how does that show that Rabbi Yosser is? So how does that show that Rabbi Yosser is correct? So one thing is, first of all, the very fact that Rabbi Yosser meets up with Eliyahu HaNavi and he tells him all of this itself shows that that Rabbi Yosser was a great person. But in any case, the point is that we see that there was reason to be angry at both of them. He was angry. He was a little bit up. He wasn't so upset the first time until he saw it happen again. And therefore, so we see that. So what do we see? Therefore, so one thing is, so there are a lot of different explanations. The Maharam Shif says, for example, that the fact that now it was publicly known. Eventually, when she ran away, it became publicly known. Everybody knew that it was because of the hare. Not everybody knew that it was because of the fly. Because at the time when he found the fly, he didn't get upset about it. So therefore, but retroactively, like now, he realizes the fly was also carelessness. So it takes special siyata d'shmaya to realize that point. Which not everybody was aware of. So we see, says Abaya, that Rabbi Yosser is a great person, that Hashem revealed that secret to him. So what's this business with the fly and the hare? What happened? Amar Rav Yehuda, zvuv b'kaira. When we say that he found a fly, we mean in his plate of food. The nima, when Rabbi Yonasan is saying he found a hare, means ba'osei makom, means not in his food. He found it in that area, in her private area, when they're having relations. So therefore, zvuv me'isusa, so the fly is just something disgusting, so it's not something to be so angry about. The nima sakanta, but the hare is an actual danger, because she should have removed that hare, otherwise there's a possibility that he gets tangled in it, and he gets injured, and becomes a cursed shofcha, and therefore he had more reason to be angry at that. Tosfos, by the way, points out there's a different Gemara that implies, that says that Bnos Yisrael at that time did not have Seir Be'Se'erva, did not have Heir in that area. So Tosfos says this Pilagish may have actually been from a Yafas Toyah or something. She had Goyisha, she had Goyisha genetics in her, and therefore she had Heir. There's different other answers among Rishonim how it could be. But whatever the case, the point is, so that's the difference. That's why he didn't object to the fly so much, but he objected to the Heir. Ikadamri, another version is, Aydi v'aydi v'kaira, both of them as he found in his food. But the difference is, Zvuv Onsa, to find a fly in there is an onus, like you have with Saramashkin, for example, you can't help if a fly falls in. Avnima Pshiosa, but to find a hair is carelessness, so therefore that's when he got angry at her. But again, so therefore we're saying that both Rav Yosef's and Rav Yonasan's points both factored into the story. And again, for example, the Maharam Shif says that once he found the hair, whether it was in Osim Makram or whether it was in the plate, as the case may be, then he got angry about also the fly, which before he hadn't gotten angry at the time, and therefore that triggered it, that now she ran away. So the point is, again, in other words, we see that Rav Yosef had special siyata d'shmaya to realize that point. So the Gemara continues on this topic. So what do we see from this story? We see the Levi was extremely angry at his Pelegish, and that caused her to run away, and that put the whole story in motion, because if it hadn't been for that, he never would have been on the road, he never would have come to Giva, and the whole story would have never happened. So Amar of Chista, La'olam al-yatil adam, Amy Yaseir, B'seich Be'seich. So Rav Chista says, a person should never cast excessive fear in his household. In other words, a person should never get in his household where they're so afraid of him. You see, the Pelegish Be'giva, that he did that, he was so angry at her that she feared for her safety, and she ran away. And the result of that story was that tens of thousands of Jews were killed in that battle that followed from that. And the Gemara continues, anybody who does that, who puts too much fear in his household and therefore makes it that the people are too afraid of him, the result is it's going to lead to three avedas, Gilei Arayos, or Shfichus Domim, the Chilul Shabbos. Now, how is it going to lead to all those three things? So Rashi explains, so Gili Arayis would be, imagine, for example, it's her mikveh night, she's supposed to be toveling, so they can then have relations. What if it's cold? They didn't have heated mikvahs in those days. So if she knows that her husband is going to fly off the handle like that, she may falsely claim that she toveled when she really didn't, because otherwise is going to get too angry. So that causes to Gili Arayis, because Nida, after all, is one of the Arayis. Shvichos Damim is, Rashi says, there's two possibilities. Number one, you have like the story over here with Pelegish Begiver. She herself was killed. So were tens of thousands of Jews. Number two, Rashi says, it could happen, for example, that she's so afraid, she runs away and she falls into a pit or she falls off a bridge or something because she's in such a hurry that she doesn't look carefully where she's going. So therefore, it can lead to Shvichos Damim. And the third one is Chilul Shabbos. So where do we see Chilul Shabbos? So Tosfos brings from Seder Olam that the day when this happened was Shabbos. Now, some of the Mephoshim learned that it means the actual day when they were in Giva that night was Friday night, and that's when this whole thing happened. On the other hand, Marashah says that's not what it means, and in fact, if you look, Marashah doesn't mention this, but if you look more at the Psukim over there, it's a little hard to say that it was, in fact, on Friday night, because, for example, you have when they leave Beis Lechem that morning, that afternoon, whatever, the father tells them, stick around for another day and you'll leave tomorrow. If tomorrow is Shabbos, obviously they couldn't do that. Whatever the case, anyway, Marashah says what we mean is the day they went to war was on Shabbos. They figured this is a Mochemes mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to get rid of such horrible behavior among Jews, and therefore that warrants breaking Shabbos and going to war. But nevertheless, it is a species of Chilul Shabbos, and we're saying all of that was caused, all of that ultimately was set into motion by this Levi being too angry with his Pelegish. That's Tosfos. So Rashi mentions a different point. Rashi says you could have, let's say, for example, that again, she hasn't had a chance to light Shabbos candles in time or to cook the food in time for Shabbos. And what happens is, again, she figures her husband is going to get so angry about that she's going to feel like she has to go put the food on the stove on Shabbos or light the candles after Shabbos began, because otherwise he's going to get angry. So therefore it leads to Chilul Shabbos in that way as well. So further on this topic, the Gemara says, Amar Rabbah Bar Chana, Now, we have a Mishnah in Shabbos that says that a person is obligated to say the following three things in his household on Erev Shabbos before it gets dark. He has to ask, Isautem, did you take Miser from the produce that were from the fruit and grain and whatever that we're going to be eating on Shabbos? Because you can't do that on Shabbos. Eravtem, did you make the Eruv? Rashi says we mean Eruv Chatzeros. Tosfos disagrees and says we mean Eruv Tchumim. But again, you can't do that on Shabbos. And he says, Hadlikus Aner, light the candles, light the Shabbos candles. So, and Mephoshim point out that the reason why the first two are given as questions and the third one is a statement is because the first two, you need to ask. You may not see whether the food is Meiser. You may not see whether the Eruv is put down. But when it comes to the Ner, you can easily see whether it's lit or not, and therefore you can make it as a statement saying, light the candles. Anyway. So the Mishnah says over there that so the Mishnah says there that you have to say those three things. So Rabbi Baba Chana says, Sorich lemeinu b'nichusa. You have to say them gently. So that they will accept them from him, so that they'll listen to him, because otherwise if he gets angry and yells at these things, then they may not want to listen. So the Gemara says, Amar Ashi, Anolo Shmieli Hod Rabbi Baba Chana. I never heard the statement of Rabbi Baba Chana. V'kiyamtiyam Yisvara, but I've always been keeping this based on Svara. Meaning, I realize on my own that that's the proper way to do it. Marsha explains that the vert is, in other words, that Rabbi Baba Chana is saying, practically speaking, you want to say it gently, so they'll accept it. Meaning, in other words, but you could still derive from that. So, what if you're a very important, prominent person, and you know that they're going to listen to you no matter what? Maybe you shouldn't be required to. Nevertheless, Rav Ashi is saying, still, I was always careful to say it gently anyway, even though I know that I'm so prominent and important. The Torah, the Gemara later on in the Masechta tells us that he was one of the few people in history who had Toto Gdullah B'makam Echad, so I know they're going to listen to me no matter what. But nevertheless, Misvara, I know that I should say it gently. So the Gemara continues, Amar Abahu, La'olam al-Yakil, Adam Eimei Yisera B'Sechvei. So a person should never put excessive fear in his household, like we've been talking about these last few lines. Shari Adam Gadol, Hitzel Eimei Yisera B'Sechvei. So I'll give you an example. A great person, a great Talmud Chacham did that. He put too much fear in his household that they knew that if something goes wrong, he's going to fly off the handle. And they wound up giving him something to eat, which is also very big, which is a big issue. So first of all, who is the person? Umanu, Rav Chanina ben Gamliel. That was Rav Chanina ben Gamliel was in this situation. So the Gemara says, what do you mean, Hechilu? Stop with that. What do you mean they gave? So what do you mean they gave him something to eat, that he actually ate it? You have a kavachomer that we know that even the animals of tzaddikim ain't a kodesh brochu, maybe takol al yodam. Hashem does not cause a stumbling block to happen through them. You have the same famous story of Pinchas ben Yair with his donkey, where his donkey wouldn't eat, where his donkey wouldn't eat grain that was tevel. So we see that even the animal in instinctively won't, Hashem will prevent it from eating something which is aser. Tzaddikim atzmon they call again. How much more so the tzaddikim themselves? Hashem would protect them from such things. Now Tosfos over here and in some other places in Shas points out that it's only a question about eating something osur. We do find in other places where Chachamim made mistakes and were over on mitzvahs in the Torah by mistake. For example, you have Rabbi Shmuel in Shabbos, where he thought that he could read by candlelight on Shabbos, and he accidentally moved then and adjusted the width. So that we're not so bothered about, because fine, that's not something that goes into his actual body. But the food that actually goes into his body and becomes, like the Rebbe says in Tanya, Dama Basa Kibsare, it becomes part of his actual flesh and blood, then it's a gnai that a tzaddik's body should be made up of food which is also like that. Anyway, so therefore, so how could you say that they gave him a dove of gadol, but they gave him a serious issue to eat? No, rather, we don't mean that Rav Chanina ben Gamliel actually ended up eating the Dove of Gadol. We mean they were going to give it to him, but somehow, at the last minute, he realized and didn't end up eating it. Oh, mind you, what is this Dove of Gadol? Eva Menachai. They were going to give him Eva Menachai. Meaning, what happened was, in other words, so again, they had an animal prepared to eat. One limb of the animal went missing. They were afraid of Rav Chanina ben Gamliel's reaction, so they quickly went and cut off Eva Menachai from a different animal in order to put there, so he shouldn't realize, and he would have ended up eating it, except that Hashem helped him that he didn't. Marshall says, why is it called Dover Godol? It's because this is the only thing which is also to eat, which even B'nai Noyach are not allowed to eat. We know that all the other Isuri Achila are mutter to B'nai Noyach, only this one. Therefore, the Gemara calls it Dover Godol. So anyway, the point, mind you, Eiv Menachai, so therefore, so we see, in other words, that Reb Chanina ben Gamliel, because he acted that way in his household, therefore, he almost came to eat Eiv Menachai. Okay. Now, before in the sugya, we mentioned that the reason why we got into this whole thing of Pelegish Begiva was, again, because we were talking about what Rabbi Yosser had written in a letter where he quoted a pasuk or part of a pasuk, and he hadn't done sirtut, and Rabbi Yosef said that he's not supposed to have done that based on what Rabbi Yitzchak said. So now the Gemara is going to give some other examples of Chachamim who wrote letters and quoted psukim in there and did do sirtut like they're supposed to. So the first one starts off, Sholach le Ma'ukva le Rabbi Elazar. Ma'ukva, who was in Babel, he was one of the leading Chachamim in Babel, he sends a message to Rabbi Elazar in Eretz Yisrael. He says, B'nei Adam ha'omdim alai. There are people who are standing up against me and are constantly cursing me out and vilifying me and whatever, and l'charef l'gadef, Rashi says, to blaspheme and call me names and curse me out, whatever. Over yadu the most from the malchus. I have the ability to hand them over to the government that they should be punished. In other words, I have the ability, I have connections with the government, I would be able to go and tell on them to the government, and they would get in trouble. Mahu, am I allowed to do that? Now, you'd want to get someone in trouble for the government, the Sira, is a pretty serious isser. So what is Ma'ukva even thinking? So as we're going to see soon in the Gemara, he figured he really can't stand it anymore, but actually, it's really an intolerable situation. So he thought maybe he's allowed to save himself in that way. But there's also the Chidon, Pesach Enayim brings an idea that he didn't mean he's gonna get this person actually killed by the government or something. He just meant, you know, they'll arrest him for a day or two and that'll put the fear of Hashem into him a little bit, so he'll stop this. Anyway, am I allowed to do that? Sirtit for Kosovlay, sort of a law of scored lines on a paper, and he wrote back to him with the Lashon HaPasuk from Tillim. A Marti Eshman of Drachai Mechatoi Bilshani. David says, I said that I will guard my ways from against sinning with my tongue. In other words, I'm not going to sin. I'm not going to do an Aveira with my tongue by going and mastering on another Yid. Eshman of Fi Machsim, and the Pasuk continues, I will guard, there will be a muzzle on my mouth, machsom, like you have in modern Hebrew. Machsom is one of those barricades that you have to go through sometimes here and there in Eretz Yisrael. So the same way, I'll put a barricade in front of my mouth, but oid rosha b'negdi, as long as the rosha is in front of me, meaning, Rabbi Elazar explained, the pasuk is saying, afisha rosha b'negdi, even though the rosha is against me, and he's harassing me and giving me a hard time, and nevertheless, nevertheless, I'm going to put a barricade in front of my mouth, and I'm not going to say anything against him or do anything against him. Shalachle, but Ma'ukva sent back another message to Rabbi Elazar. Kavatsari li tshuva. This person is bothering me tremendously. I can't stand it anymore. I can't tolerate it anymore. What do I do? Shalachle. So Rabbi Elazar sent him another message in a letter. The different pasuk in Tillim says, "Doim LaHashem beischoila loy." The simple meaning of the pasuk, "Doim LaHashem," means be quiet for Hashem, beischoila loy, and hope or expect that Hashem will help you. But he explains to him. By the way, an interesting point is here: the Gemara doesn't mention that Rabbi Elazar scored lines on the page on the parchment before he wrote this pasuk. The Maharam Shif points out an interesting point. Here you have a part of a pasuk that has Hashem's name in it. He's obviously not writing out the name Yudke Vovke in a letter. So he's writing a hey with a tip like we do, or two or three yudim like they did in different places. So therefore, so now he's not writing out a whole pasuk, therefore he doesn't need to do sefer. Anyway, so he says, let's darshan the pasuk, doim LaHashem, literally means be quiet for Hashem. So it means exactly that, doim LaHashem, wait and be quiet for Hashem to help you. V'yischoilaloi means, v'huya pilim v'chachalolim chalolim, Hashem will cause that they will fall as corpses, as dead bodies in front of you. In other words, we're going to darshan, the word v'yischoilal is related to the word chalolim. In fact, by the way, Tosfos brings over here something related to this week's parasha. Well, technically next week's parasha, but whatever, it's Chitas now, that we find when Aaron's sons, Nadav and Avihu, were killed by Yidoyim Aaron, that Aaron was silent and accepted Hashem's Zera with love, and therefore that's another meaning of Doim LaHashem V'Yisholalo, even though Hashem has caused that there are dead bodies in front of you, in this case, Aaron's own sons, nevertheless, Doim LaHashem, be quiet and don't complain against Hashem, and Aaron did that. But here, Rabbi Lozer is saying to Marukva a different meaning of it. It means you be quiet in front of Hashem, and He will make them halalim halalim, that they'll be dead bodies. And also another meaning of doim, hashkin v'harav aleim l'beis medrash, go early in the morning and stay late at night over them in the beis medrash. It can mean to learn Torah. It can also mean to daven. Tosfos points out the word doim is also related to the word dimdume chama, which means the twilight, which means when the sun is, when the rays of the sun are first coming over the horizon, and when they're last going down below the horizon as the sun is setting, so therefore, and those are the times to daven, so therefore, daven at those times to Hashem, that Hashem should help you, and it can also mean to learn Torah at those times, and those people will disappear on their own. So that's another meaning of Doim LaHashem means that. Tosfos, by the way, points out, it has to be over here that Ma'ukva did not have any recourse in a based in here on earth. There was no based in that he could appeal to get this guy to stop doing what he was doing. Otherwise, he's not allowed to do that. Otherwise, he's not allowed to daven to Hashem to punish this person. The Gemara elsewhere in Bava Kamma speaks very harshly about a person who does that. But here, the Gemara says over there that where he has no other recourse, he can do that. And that was Ma'ukva's situation. So, sure enough, the Gemara continues. Adava yotz mipi Rabbi Lozer. Rabbi Lozer, no sooner had Rabbi Lozer said this, v'nasnu l'gniva b'koilar, then Gniva was arrested and put in chains. Gniva was the name of this person. He was a Talmid Chacham. He's going to be mentioned several more times in this Masechta. He was a Talmud Chacham, he was a Talmud of Rab, but unfortunately, as we're saying over here, he was also a Baal Midas Rois, and he was harassing Ma'ukva. So now, as a result of what Rabbi Lozer said, sure enough, the government, for their own reasons, ended up arresting Gniva and putting him in chains, and therefore now Ma'ukva is spared from him. So we see that what Rabbi Lozer said came true. Ma'ukva went to daven and to learn and to expect Hashem's help, and sure enough, Hashem made the help come without Ma'ukva having to master on him. Another story involving Sirtut, Shochulei Ma'ukva. They one time sent a message to the same Ma'ukva to ask him, Zimra Menolon de Osir. How do we know after the Churban that you're not allowed to be singing and playing music? Rashi says specifically we're talking about at a party, in a Beis HaMishneh, at a party. So now the Mishnah at the end of Sota mentions that point, that after the Sanhedrin was bottled, which is 40 years before the Churban, then at that point they made a gzera that you shouldn't be singing in Beis HaMishtaros. So Rashi says that's what we're talking about over here. Tosfos mentions another point also. It can also mean, for example, going to bed and getting up in the morning with music. So, we're not talking about now when we have smartphones, of course, and you have music on them. We're talking about in the olden days when the only way to have music would actually be to have people singing and playing instruments over there. So you shouldn't have that you're going to sleep and getting up with music like the way Goyisha noblemen and whatever do. The whole matter of music and singing nowadays, first of all, Tosfos mentions you are allowed to for a mitzvah, for example, to be Masameach Chasim V'Kala. Different other Rishonim and Achronim talk about that you're allowed to do music and singing, for example, when it's to praise Hashem and different other things. So there are Heterim for Jewish music, but it's a little complicated. Anyway, so now they ask Ma'ukva, where do we get this from? That after the Churban, then we're not allowed to be playing music and singing. Sirtut, the Kosev Lahu. So Ma'ukva did Sirtut. Again, he scored lines on a paper because he would be quoting a Pasuk. The Kosev Lahu, and he answered them back with a Pasuk from Hosea, Al Tismach Yisrael El Gil Bo'amim, or Ko'amim, actually, it says in the Pasuk. Don't be happy, Yisrael, with the kind of happiness that the Goyim have. In other words, the Goyim have this kind of thing, music at their parties and whatever. So you shouldn't be doing that. You Jewish people shouldn't be doing that. And the point is, the previous pasuk before that in Hosea talks about the Churban and the Golos, telling us therefore that that's the time when we're talking about. So you shouldn't, so it's not an appropriate time. So the Gemara asks, why did he quote that pasuk? V'lishlachu me'acha. Why instead didn't he send them on the basis of a different pasuk in Yeshaya that says, which is also talking about at the time of the Churban, bashir lo yishtu yoyin. When they're singing, they're not going to be drinking wine. In other words, wine and singing are not going to go together. Yemar sheicher l'shoisa. Strong wine is going to feel bitter to those who drink it. So that also shows that you can't have wine and singing together. The answer is but if you only had that pasuk, you would think, based on the pasuk in Yeshaya, it means only, for example, music accompanied, it means only singing accompanied by musical instruments. Aval de Puma, but if it's only vocal, shori, maybe it should be allowed. Tamash Malon, therefore he quoted the pasuk from Yeshaya, which talks about even more so that, we're talking about even more so just vocals alone. Again, you do have the various haterim for it, but you do have the various haterim, including when it's a praise Hashem or for when it's a mitzvah. But the fact is, there is a din in Shulchan Aruch about this that in principle, in the time when the Mishnah is not standing, there's dinim that we're really not supposed to have music, at least under certain circumstances. Okay. So now we had before that in the story of Ma'ukva, in the first story of Ma'ukva, we had that this Gniva was harassing him, and Rabbi Elazar had told him to be quiet and wait for Hashem's help. So now the Gemara is going to bring some more drashas on that topic. Amalei Rav Huna bar Nosson Rav Ashi. Rav Huna bar Nosson, who he was a Reish Galusa in his times, but he was also one of the great Chachamim. So he asked Rav Ashi, "My dichtiv kina v'dimoina va'ad oda." What does it mean? In Yeshua, there's a list of cities in Eretz Yisrael, and it says over there, kina v'dimoina va'ad oda. So what is this? So what's the deeper meaning of this passage? So Rav Ashi says, what do you mean? What's the meaning? It's listing the cities in Eretz Yisrael. The psukim go over there and say for Yeshua, after it describes how the Jewish people conquered most of Eretz Yisrael and settled it. So it describes the borders and the territories of each of the Shvatim, and it lists the cities in each one. So for Yehuda, it's giving lists of cities, and this is in the territory of Yehuda, and it mentions these three cities. What are you asking about? Amalei, so Rav Huna bar Nosson answers, "Otu anola yadina de masvasa de Eretz Yisrael kachashim." Don't you think I know that the simple meaning of the pasuk is the cities in Eretz Yisrael? Ella, but the reason I'm asking you is as an introduction to Rav Gvir Me'er Giza Omer Batayim. You should know that Rav Gvir Me'er Giza gave a deeper reason for this list in the pasuk, and he doushin it as follows. The first word kina is similar to the word kina, which means jealousy. So when a person has reason to be jealous and angry at somebody else because the other person is harassing him, the doimim, and he's quiet, where there, that's so the word dimoina is similar to the word doimim. Then the third one, va'ab oda, is sheichin, adei ad, Hashem, who lives forever and ever, oisalechin, will do din on his behalf, will execute judgment on his behalf, and punish the people, and make it that he won't have to deal with these problems anymore. So that's the drasha from kinav dimona va'ab oda. Amalei, so Rav Ashi says, elameata, by that logic, if you're going to douch in the psukim like that, what about another pasuk a few psukim later? Siklagu madmano besansano. You have another list of, you have three cities per pasuk over there, and you have another city, you have another pasuk that mentions three more. Siklagu madmano besansano. Hachinami, you're going to say the same thing. But Pashtos, they're names of cities, nothing more. Amalei, But Rav Huna bar Nosson says, I don't know, but I'll tell you, if Rav Gvir from Be'er Giza was here, Chava Amar Bataima, I'm sure he would find a good explanation for this pasuk as well. I don't know what it is, but I'm sure there is. Well, the Gemara says, Rav Acha mi Be'er Giza Amar Bahavi. Rav Acha from Be'er Giza, sure enough, came up with a drasha for it. Rav Shmuel Goin in his Igeres actually has a different girsa, not Rav Acha mi Be'er Giza, but Rav Acha mi Be'er Chosim, and he identifies him as one of the first of the Rabbanon Sevaroi. So we're talking in the next generation, two generations after Rav Huna bar Nosson and Rav Ashi, then one of the first of the Rabbanon Sevaroi finally came up with a drasha for this pasuk, and therefore it was put in the Gemara. Anyway. The drasha is, the first word siklag, similar to the word sakas legima, which means a complaint about parnasa. The word legima means food, like gedola legima shemakarevis. So komish yesh le sakas legima al chaver, right? When a person has a complaint about parnasa against somebody else, the other person is interfering with his parnasa. The doimim, but he's quiet, so the word umadmana is similar to the word doimim. then the San Sana, then Shoichen Besne, Hashem who rested in the thorn bush when he first appeared to Moshe Rabbeinu, Oisalay Din will execute judgment on his behalf and punish that person. So we can douse in this pasuk similarly as well. Now why did the Gemara pick on these two psukim? So the Rosh brings an explanation going all the way back to the Moshe Hadarshan that the pasuk in Yeshua there, it lists these cities 3 by 3 in a pasuk, and then at the end it says altogether there are 38 cities. It says there were 29 cities, but if you count them, you actually find 38. Therefore, the Gemara understood that there are some cities in there that are not really cities, but rather are there for Jerusha. On the simple meaning, Rashi explains on the pasuk that what it was is since eventually Shimon got a territory within the Nachla of Yehuda. Yehuda's Nachla was too big for them at that point, so they took some of it, and temporarily reassigned it to Shimon. So therefore, it's subtracting 9 because 9 cities ended up going to Shimon. But see, another way of understanding is that some of these are not actually cities, but are here for the Jerusha. The Malbim on the pasuk explains in a somewhat similar vein. He says the Chachamim knew that some of these cities mentioned over here are not actually independent cities. They're more suburbs of bigger cities, and the question is why they were listed, and the answer is because of the Derasha. Now, the Maharam Shif also points out another reason what makes the Gemara think that these psukim, more than any of the others, should be Daushin, is because you have these repetitive names over there. The Ad Odah and the San Sana. So therefore, the Gemara assumes that those repetitive names are name mapped for a Jerusha. And then once they are, then the other ones in the Psukim are also for a Jerusha. Okay. Since we talked about that singing and music after the Churban is Osir, so now the Gemara is going to talk about a related topic. Amale Reish Galusa V'Rabhuna. The Reish Galusa of his times, the governor of the Yidden in Babel, asks Rabhuna, Klila Minolam De Osir. How do we know that a klila is osur? Now, a klila is a type of crown. So Rashi explains they would have like a crown or a coronet or something like that that they would make for a chosin. Sometimes people would make it out of gold and silver with designs on them. Sometimes instead they would make them out of roses or hadassim. So the question is, how do we know that it's osur for a chosin to wear such a thing nowadays after the churban? Omalei, so Rabbana says, not Dardai, so Midrabbanan. It's a Zela Dirabbanan. Ditznan, as we learn in a Mishnah at the end of Soita. The Pumus Shal Aspasianus goes during the war of Aspasianus, which is the war immediately before the Churban. Gozu al Atris Chassanim, they made a Zera that Chassanim shouldn't wear crowns, Ba'ala Eros, and they also made a Zera that you shouldn't have an Eros, which is a type of tambourine or something, shouldn't be played at weddings in order to reduce the amount of simcha because of the Churban and the Golos. So that's what it is. It's not Daraisa, it's Darabam. Well, the Gemara continues, Ada Hochi Kam Rav Huna Lachnuye. Meanwhile, Rav Huna got up because he had to go to the bathroom. So now, while Rav Huna was away, now Rav Chista was a Talmud of Rav Huna. Rav Chista was there also. He wasn't going to speak up in Rav Huna's presence, but once Rav Huna had left the room, then he felt more free to speak up. So that's how Rashi explains. So now that Rav Huna left, Omele Rav Chista, so Rav Chista says to the Reish Galusa, actually, Kroksiv, there is actually a pasuk that shows that it's not just a Zera Dirabonon from the end of the second Mishnah, it's actually something from that we find in a pasuk in Yechezkel. Meaning, in other words, we can say that it's one of those Zeras that comes from the times of the Nevi'im, which is like a stronger Dirabonon. By the way, Tosfos talks about over here, when we say this whole question about Klila, Tosfos learns we're not necessarily talking about a tiara or a crown or whatever on the chosin's head, rather we're talking about a kind of canopy, not the chuppah like we have, not the canopy that we have for a chuppah, but a different kind of canopy that they would have, that they would put over the chosin, that they would have hanging over the chosin's head. So Rav Chista says, there's actually a pasuk that implies this, being. The pasuk says Yechezkel is talking about before the Churban. Koy Amar Hashem Alekim. So says Hashem. Hosir Hamitznefes. Remove the mitznefes, which means the turban. Vahorin Ha'atara, and lift off the crown. Zois lois zois, this will not be this. Pashta meaning is that it means this greatness that was until now will not continue from now on. We'll see the Gemara is soon going to douch in the phrase differently. Hashafala hagbeya, what was low up until now will be raised up. Vagavaya hashbil, and what was high up until now will be lowered down. So now you have to ask, says Rav Chisda, v'chimain mitznepes etzel atorah. The mitznepes is one of the digdei kohen gadol, where the atorah is a crown, which the king wears. What does one have to do with the other? Why is Yechezkel mentioning them in the same breath? Hoser mitznepes v'horin ha'atorah. So it means, we darshan, elo loymalach, it comes to tell you, bizman shel mitznepes v'rosh kohen gadol, when the turban is on the head of the kohen gadol, when there's a bis mikdash and there's a kohen gadol functioning and serving in the bis mikdash and then wearing the mitznepes as one of his digdei kohen gadol, then atorah barosh kol adam, then you're allowed to have crowns or tiaras on top of everybody's heads, or as Rashi says, we're talking about a crown or a coronet, or as Tosfos says, we're talking about some kind of canopy or some kind of wreath or something. Anyway, when you have the one, then you can have the other. But once the mitznefes has been removed from the kohen gadol's head because the bis mikdash was destroyed, then automatically the atorah has to go off everybody's heads, so therefore nobody's allowed to wear an atorah anymore, therefore chosin is not allowed to wear it. Tosfos also points out that really it's not actually also to everybody. What it is, it's also to a chosin because he has greater simcha. So we want to keep the simcha under limits when the bis mikdash is destroyed. So that was Rav Chisda's explanation. Ad hachi osa Rabuna. Meanwhile, as they were talking, Rabuna came back. Ashkechinu da'ava yasvi. He saw that Reish Kabusa and Rav Chisda were still sitting and discussing this drosha of Rav Chisda's. Omalei, so he says, Harlekim, I swear in Hashem's name, midrabanan. The fact is that the issue is only midrabanan from the Mishnah and Sota, like I quoted. The pasuk in Yechezkel was talking about something else. It's talking about the crown of the king. It doesn't mean the crown of a chosin. It means that the corona gola and the kingship are both going to cease when the Beis Mikdash is destroyed. But you should know, your name is Chista, and your words are very beautiful and have a lot of chesed to them. In other words, you have a very nice way of doubting the pasuk, but you should know that's not the simple meaning of what the pasuk means. So in this connection, the Gemara says, Rava Ashkeche Lamabravashi Dabagoto Klula Librate. Ravina one time found Mabravashi was weaving a crown like that for his daughter for her wedding. Omalei, so Ravina says, like Sovla Mar Hosam Mitznefes Vahorim Atara, don't you agree with the drosha that Rav Chisda said from that pasuk? So why are you doing that? Omalei, so Ma'abra Ravashi answers, Dumya the Kohen Gadol. The fact is, since we're daushening from that pasuk, then it means it has to be similar to the Kohen Gadol. Begabri, and a Kohen Gadol is only a man, because the Kohen Gadol can only be a man. Av Benoshi Loi, by women there's no Isser, so therefore a woman is allowed to wear such a crown or a tiara or whatever by her wedding. Now there is the Gemara in Sota mentions over there that eventually they made Xera against Atris Kalos as well, against certain kinds of coronets and crowns that Kalos wear as well. So there are certain kinds that are also even now, but then there are other kinds that are mutter now. And then some Abra Ravashi was making one of those kinds. Okay, the Gemara says, my zois loy zois. In the pasuk from Yechezkel, we had the word zois loy zois, this, not this. So again, the simple meaning means this greatness that was until now will not continue. But what does the Navi need to say that for? So Darash Rav Avira, so Rav Avira gave a Darasha, Zimnin Omalei Mishmeder Rav Asi, Mishmeder Rav Ami, Zimnin Omalei Mishmeder Rav Asi. Sometimes he told it over in the name of Rav Ami, and sometimes in the name of Rav Asi. They were both his Rebbeim. When Hashem is saying this Nebuah to Yechezkel to tell the Jewish people that the Mitznefes of the Kohen Gadol and the Atorah of the king or of the Chosen is going to be removed, the Malachim said to Hashem, Zois Lahem Yisrael, is this right that you should be doing this to the Jewish people? Where they, by Matan Torah, they said Nasa before Nishma, shouldn't they have the schus that they should be able to keep the Mitznefes and the Atorah, and you shouldn't destroy the Mitznefes, and you shouldn't remove the kingship? So that's the Zois they're asking. Sashem answers back, Loi Zois Lahem Yisrael. Shouldn't this be the right thing for the Jewish people? Where on the contrary, Shishpilu Es HaGavoya VeYigbiru Es HaShokol, where as the pasuk continues, they raised up what was supposed to be, they lowered what was supposed to be high and raised up what was supposed to be low. They had Midut Selim Behechol, they put an idol on the Hechol, so it should be Hashem is the greatest and most exalted, and they should be respecting him. And instead, they denigrated and then degraded him. And instead, they took up a desire, which is supposed to be the lowliest thing, and they raised it up. So therefore, Hashem is saying, Loi Zois, isn't it right that I should be doing this to them as a result of that? So that's the Zois Loi Zois. Since we mentioned a drasha of Rav Avira, so now the Gemara brings another drasha of his. Darash Rav Avira, Zimnin Amul HaMashmeh Rav Ami, Zimnin Amul HaMashmeh Rav Asi, Mai Dichtiv, what does it mean, a posuk in Nochum? Now the Navi Nochum, he's one of the Treyasser, the focus of his Nebuah is about the kingdom of Ashur. You had previously, Yonah had gone to them to get them to do tshuva, and they did. And then eventually they became a very great, powerful empire, and they destroyed the kingdom of the Aseret HaShevatim and came close to destroying the kingdom of Yehuda as well, except that Sennacherib's army was wiped out at the last moment. So now Nochum, a generation or two later, is saying Nevuah about Asher, how they went back, they reverted to being total Rishoyim, like they were in Yonah's times, and therefore they're going to get punished, and they're going to get destroyed. So his whole sefer of three chapters is a Nevuah about that. So he says a line in there. He says, Koyamar Hashem, Im Shleimim V'chein Rabim, if they are complete and if they are also many, V'chein Nevgoizu V'ovar V'goymer, then so they will be cut off and go away. So the simple meaning of the pasuk is Hashem is telling the Navi, is telling the Jewish people in Hashem's name that even though the kingdom of Asher is very whole, they're very complete and powerful, and there's many of them, nevertheless they're going to be cut off and they're going to disappear, and they're not going to harass you Jewish people anymore. But Rav Avira is davening. It means im roya adam shem zenois of mitzvamim. If a person sees that his livelihood is just the bare minimum, he's just making ends meet, but he has nothing extra. So that's the shleimim. Like he has just enough money to for his expenses, but no more than that. Nevertheless, he should take some of his money and give it to tzedakah. So that's the koyim hashem im shleimim. And how much more so if a person has extra mizonis, if a person has extra income, then he should be given tzedakah. That's the v'chein rabbi. So what is the continuation of the pasuk? And thus they are cut off and they go over. When a person cuts off from his nechosim and gives tzedakah from it, nitzel midinah shel gehenim, then he will be saved as a result of that source from the judgment of gehenim. Moshel l'shtei l'chei l'shtei l'ovis b'mayim, as a moshel you can compare to two sheep that are crossing the water, that are wading through the water. Achas gzuzah v'achas she'ena gzuzah, one has been shorn of its wool, the other one is not, it's still carrying a full load of wool. Gzuza Avra, the one that was shorn is able to cross safely because not weighted dead when there's no wool on it to absorb the water and weigh it down, so therefore it's able to go. Vashaina Gzuza Layovra, the one that wasn't shorn, doesn't get across safely because the water the wool absorbs a lot of water and that weighs it down and then it's not able to cross. So the same way, in other words, when a person should make sure that he's not, so to speak, weighed down by too much money, and that way he gets saved from the judgment of Gehenna. That's the v'chein of goes over. Over if it's cut off, if the money has been cut off and given to tzedakah, then over, then you'll be able to cross safe. Now the pasuk continues. That same pasuk in Nochum continues. The inisich loy anech oy. The pasuk continues. I afflicted you, but I will not afflict you anymore. So again, in context, the pasuk is saying to the Jewish people, I afflicted you, you suffered terribly from Asher, but now you won't anymore. But now, the Gemara is going to continue with a drasha on that part of the pasuk. Omer Mazutra, afilu oni amispanis, the inisich, Omer Mazutra, afilu oni amispanis, v'nat tzedakah, yasa tzedakah. Even an oni who himself has to live off tzedakah, he himself still has a mitzvah to give tzedakah. So therefore, so that's the inisich. Even if you're poor, you still have that b'chein of goes over. And in fact, that's the halacha. That's even a poor person who lives off stuff is himself required to give stuff. So there's a minimum amount, by the way. There's the Oruch HaShulchan explained, the Rambam explained the minimum amount a person has to give to tzedakah every year, at least a third of a shekel. If he doesn't, then he's not the kind of mitzvah of tzedakah. So that a person has to do, even if he himself is poor. Then when you have the Rambam says, on the other hand, that if a person is poor and he can't support himself, then he's not obligated to give tzedakah. That means beyond the one third. He doesn't have to give meiser, for example. And the pasuk finishes off, loy anech oid, continues, I will not afflict you anymore. Tony Rav Yosef, so Rav Yosef says, Rav Yosef taught a braita that explains that if a person does all of that we said, that even though he's poor, he's barely making ends meet, or he's not even making ends meet, and still he takes money and gives it to tzedakah, shuv ein marin loy simoni anius, then Hashem will no longer show him signs of poverty, loy anech oid, I will not make you poor anymore. In other words, he will be zoicha to become rich as a result of that he gave tzedakah even when he was having a hard time with it. Okay. Getting now back to the Mishnah and to the halachas of Gittin. The Mishnah had said, Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a Rekem of Mizrachullah. Rabbi Yehuda had said that from Rekem and eastward, including the city of Rekem itself, is considered a dynasty Yan. He has to say, Mfananeftem, and he lists the other directions, and he mentions from Akoi northward. So the Gemara asks the member of the Akko that's pointed out to Sura Kaima, are you telling me that Akko is located on the north side of, on the northern border of Eretz Yisrael? Where the implication seems to be that Akko is the furthest north point you can go in Eretz Yisrael. Now, we did talk about at the beginning of the Masechta, you do have, there's the original boundaries of Ole Mitzrayim, when they first came out of Mitzrayim and conquered Eretz Yisrael. Yes, they conquered areas further north of Akoi, but then there was Ole Bavel, when they came back and built the second Mishmikdash, then they settled in a more restricted area of Eretz Yisrael. But still, it sounds from what Rabbi Yehuda is saying that Akoi is the extreme northern border. But the Gemara says, Uraminu, I have a contradiction from a braisa that talks about the din of Tumas Eretz Amin. We learned in Nazir that you have the Chachamim made of Zera that any place outside Eretz Yisrael is Tomei in the Drabanan. We said over there that is it the dirt of it that's Tomei? Is it the very air of it that's Tomei? Whatever the case, what's the definition of where Eretz Yisrael ends and Chutz La'aretz begins? So Bryce says, Hoya Mahalach me Akoi l'Kziv. If a person is walking on the road from Akoi to Kziv, where Kziv is further north than Akoi, then Miminoi, then all the land to his right side, Lemizra Haderach, which is on the east side of the road, Tmeya Mishum Eretz Ha'amim, is Tomei on the grounds of being Eretz Ha'amim. So in other words, even though you're walking from Akoi north to Kziv, but anything to your right side, which is going to be towards the east, is actually going to be outside Eretz Yisrael. By the way, Hagoris Hagroth flips around some of the directions of you. He has the other way around. On the contrary, the side on your right side is Tohar, the side on your left side would be Tomei. So he has the gears to the other way around. The truth is, there are actually, there's an enormous number. You have over here a couple of diagrams in Rashi to illustrate, well, you have one diagram over here to illustrate what the Gemara is going to end up explaining about where Akko is located. Rashi explains that the Gemara is starting with the assumption that Akko is on the east side of Eretz Yisrael. And there is a considerable discussion among Rishonim about that, because on the face of it, we have various sources that make it very clear that Akko is on the west coast of Eretz Yisrael. Now, the city is still there. It's a few miles north of Haifa, and it's very much on the west coast of Eretz Yisrael. So there are different explanations, including that maybe it's only the Habamin of the Gemara thought it's on the east side, or maybe actually the Gemara is going to end up saying that there's an area like where the border narrows and widens. So there's several different possibilities. There's several different diagrams that different Rishonim and Achronim offer to say what is considered, what parts are considered part of Eretz Yisrael and what is not, and where Akko is located. Anyway, so it's saying that all the land that's to the right side, to the east side of the road, Tmei Mishum Eretz Amin, is Tomei on the grounds of being the land of the Goyim, Upturim and Amaiser and Ashvias, and anything that grows there is Potter from Maiser and from Shemitah, unless you come to a place where, even though it's on the east side of the road, somebody knows the area and he tells you that particular place is actually within the borders of Eretz Yisrael, but other than that, you can assume that the road itself marks the border. Similarly, anything that's to your left as you're walking along over there from Akko to Kziv, anything on your left, which is towards the west side of the road, is assumed to be Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, Tahora Mishum Eretz Amin, it's Tahora on the grounds of Eretz Amin, the Chayevis, the Maisur, the Shvius.
And it's chayiv and maisu and shmita. Ad shiyivadol chashi torah. Unless you find out that a particular area is potter because in that particular place the road curves and includes an area that's not Eretz Yisrael. And this applies ad kziv. This applies until you reach kziv, which is a few miles north of Akko. Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi omer b'shem aviv ad lavlavoy. Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi says in the name of his father until a place called lavlavoy. Anyway, the point is that Akko apparently is not all the way on the northern border. It continues all the way up to kziv. So the Gemara answers, "Amar Abaye, it's so nafka." It means that Akoi is the extreme northern end of the main shape of Eretz Yisrael. If you imagine, if you see over here in the diagram of Rashi, if you imagine Eretz Yisrael as a square, it's not a square, obviously, but in other words, you have like a certain defined area, which is Eretz Yisrael. Then Akoi is located on the northern border of it, and then you have further than that, there sticks up a peninsula or a panhandle or something that goes all the way to Kziv. And that is also part of Eretz Yisrael. So that's what the Braisa was saying, then that when you're walking along that road, whatever's to your east is part of Eretz Yisrael, and whatever's to your east is not part of Eretz Yisrael, and whatever's to your west is. But the basic, if you draw a map of Eretz Yisrael, in other words, you'll have the main shape of Eretz Yisrael ends at Akko. Then you have that little strip of land that continues on towards Ziv. And again, you have Rishonim actually who learn the other way around. You have Rishonim and Achronim who learn the other way around and give various diagrams and maps and say that it's actually the other way around, that it means that up until Akko, the full width of the land is considered Eretz Yisrael, whereas after that you have it narrows and only part of it is, and you have like a strip of land that sticks downward along the coast, which is not considered part of Eretz Yisrael, and then you have the rest of it, and you have that strip of land, that panhandle that goes and chokes in. Anyway, so the Gemara asks me, Yohiv Tana Simona Hachi, does the Tana give a simon like that with only one strip of land? Now, the Tana should be giving a simon that involves the whole Eretz Yisrael. Why is the Tana bothering to mention that detail about the east and the west side of the road? That's how Rashi learns. We'll talk in a second how Tosfos learns the question. And the Gemara answers, "Ain." As a matter of fact, yes. Kronami Yohiv Simona. In fact, the Pasuk even gives a simon like that based on a road. Dichtiv, as you have the Pasuk at the end of Sefer Shoftim, at the end of the whole story of Pelegish Begiva that we talked about before, the upshot was, we said almost all of Shevet Binyamin was wiped out. In particular, all the women of the Shevet were gone. So now there were 600 surviving men. They had to find a way, how are we going to allow them to remarry? All the other Shvatim had made a Shavua that they're not going to allow their daughters to marry to marry in the Shevet Binyamin. So first they found there was a city, Yavish Dilad, which hadn't been there, and they were able to find 400 girls there, but there were still 200 short. So then the Pasuk describes that the Vayomru, they said, here's an idea. There is a festival of Hashem, there's a Yom Tov of Hashem, in Shiloh, every now and then, in particular the Gemara mentions in Tainus that this was Tuba of. And where is Shiloh located? Some of the Mephoshim say, the question is, where is the location where the girls are going to be dancing located? You have at the end of Tainus, it tells over there how the unmarried girls of Yerushalayim, and here in the time we're talking about, the unmarried girls of Shiloh would go and dance in the vineyards, and that would be a time for Shiduchim. You have the famous thing at the end of Tainus that the beautiful girls would say, look at beauty when you're choosing your Shiduch, and the ones who had Yichus would say, look at Yichus, and the ones who had neither would say, Shekerach, etc. And that's one of the things we know we celebrate on Tu B'Av, on Chamisha Asabav. So now some of the Mephoshim say, with the simon we're giving is the location where the girls are going to be dancing. The upshot is, in other words, the point is, the Pasuk is saying that they told the Bnei Binyamin, you go and hide out over there, and then grab, each of you grab one of the girls, and then you have a Kaddish her, and then there won't be any problem, because you'll tell their fathers, well, your Shavua was that you're not going to allow them, you're not going to accept Kiddushin on their behalf to Bnei Binyamin, but you didn't, you had nothing to do with it, they picked them themselves, and therefore you'll get around the Shavua that way. Mara tells us, in fact, that was one of the things that we celebrate on Chamisha Asabav, that they found a heter for Shevet Binyamin to reintegrate with the rest of the Jewish people. Anyway, so the Pasuk is, Vayomer, Hine Chag Hashem b'Shiloi miyamim yamima. There's a yomtiv to Hashem in Shiloi every now and then. And where is it located? Hashem is tzfoino l'beisel. It's north of Beisel. Mizruch HaShemesh l'mesilah ha'olam l'beisel shema. It's on the east side of the road that goes up from Beis El to Shechem. I mean, nowadays that Mesila is more or less Highway 60 in Eretz Yisrael. Negev Levoina, and it's located south of Levoina. So therefore, so now, what does Mizrach HaShemesh mean? For Omer HaPopel, Mizrach HaShemesh. It doesn't mean that Shiloh is on the east side of Eretz Yisrael. I mean, it is, in fact, it is on the, it is towards the east of Eretz Yisrael, but that's not what the pasuk means. It means that this location of Shiloh, or the place where they're dancing or whatever, is located east of the road. So we see, in other words, that the pasuk is giving a simon based on a road. So therefore, so the Tanakh can also give a simon of what's Eretz Yisrael and what's Chutz La'aretz based on a road. Tosfos says that's not the Gemara's question to begin with. Of course the Tanna has to tell us the detailed borders of Eretz Yisrael. Of course it's important to know that one side of this road is Eretz Yisrael and the other side is Chutz La'aretz. The question is rather, why is the Tanna using something so unimportant as a road to be a landmark? Shouldn't the Tanna be using some more prominent landmark? And the answer is, since we see that the Pasuk uses a road as a landmark, then therefore it works for the Tanna as well and he can do it as well. Okay.